Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Negotiation, and on today's show we speak with Jacob Cook, co-founder and CEO of WPIC Marketing and Technologies, about the recent Singles Day Shopping Festival in China. We discuss the evolution of Singles Day, its performance in 2024, innovations in e-commerce, logistics challenges, and the competitive landscape of e-commerce platforms in China. Jacob shares insights on consumer behavior, marketing strategies, and the future of sales events in the region. Enjoy.
Well, Alibaba is coming out the clear winner. Alibaba and Jingdong are probably your two biggest 11-11 platforms. They just fit the general. You look at PDD and you look at Douyin, they're known for sort of year-round annual discounts, which makes it hard for them to just really, hey, but you know, we told you we were the cheapest last month, but hey, November is actually going to be the cheaper this month. So they don't actually do proportionally as well as the two other platforms do. So it's still a play between JD and Alibaba's platforms primarily, but we'll see how the other ones adapt throughout the years.
Home to over 4 billion people, the Asia-Pacific region boasts one of the most powerful consumer markets on the planet. Not only is it home to half of the world's under 30 population, but it's also home to more than half the world's internet users. It's a market that no globally minded organization should ignore. But entering markets like China, Japan, or Southeast Asia is no easy task. Just ask the likes of Microsoft, Google, Uber, and Facebook. However, times are changing, and with the right partners, doors are slowly opening as more and more companies find success growing their key markets in APAC. I myself spent 8 years in China, mostly as a venture capitalist, helping early-stage tech companies grow in the Asia-Pacific market successfully. This show is dedicated to uncovering and examining successful Asia market entry and growth strategies by interviewing the experts who've done it before and truly understand what it takes to be successful in the region. My name is Todd Embley, and welcome to The Negotiation, brought to you by WPIC Marketing and Technologies.
Now, we are fresh off of Singles Day Shopping Festival. It is November 12th as we record this, and Jacob is joining us to chat about this year's festival and how everything went down. Jacob, thank you very much for joining us, and welcome to The Negotiation once again.
Thank you, Todd. Great to be here.
You're in Beijing. How long you been there? Why is it important for you to be in Beijing during this time?
Yeah, so our company was founded in Beijing. That's why I'm here today. I'm up at our head office, but actually probably 80, 90% of our team members in China now are either in Hangzhou or Nanjing. And that's where I spend a lot of my time. That's really where the brains of our operation has developed over the last little while. But of course, being on the ground here, this has been a little bit different, 11-11. I mean, obviously, it's a China-based holiday, but boy, did it spread to Southeast Asia as well. We ran Lazada sales in Thailand even for 11-11. We did a little bit in Korea, not so much in Japan. But I think, you know, one of the big stories is that now it's really spreading beyond the borders now, which is not a huge surprise. I mean, interestingly enough, you know, you see Coupang with its development office in Shanghai, you know, really becoming the big player in Korea. Lazada, of course, is owned by Alibaba, run out of Hangzhou, China. Shopee, very heavily Tencent invested. Forest is obviously from China. So it's not, you know, totally unexpected that we're seeing all this influence in both, you know, the live streamers as well as 11-11 becoming a thing now, not only in China, but the rest of Asia, and probably not long for the rest of the world, too.
Our audience is very smart. They know what's up. But for those who maybe just be joining lately or just for now, just quickly run down, what is 11-11?
Well, Singles Day. I mean, it's the most amount of ones in a date numerically, and it has turned into a shopping festival. I don't know, what are we, 16, 17 years into this now? You kind of lose count. But it started out as being something that happened on November 11th, you know, the biggest amount of sales, probably, you know, like a Chinese equivalent to Cyber Monday or Black Friday or even Boxing Day and some of these traditions that you see in the West that are just solely shopping days. Well, the first one came here at 11-11, and that was originally to celebrate singles, and people that were single got together and had their own festival, and it turned into a shopping day. And then its counterpart in June is 6/18, which is, you know, 6/18, Liao Yao Fa, which is kind of like I want to be rich. And that's been a numerically an important day too, but neither of them have any connotation outside of just kind of numbers and dates that have been just proven to be big shopping festivals now. And in terms of, you know, the raw economic numbers of it, if you look at those two dates every year, you're going to do about 50% of your online sales in that period. So they're extremely consequential to your success or failure of the year.
Wow. Okay. Let's talk about this year then. How did November 11, 2024 perform?
Great. I mean, we're just coming off of it. We're all pretty exhausted. A lot of PTO and days off being used today. I threw on a hoodie this morning. I probably didn't have enough energy to go collared shirt. But we did better than last year, you know, and that's a thing. So it's always tough with the overall non-publishing of GMV numbers. But I felt that last year was up between 11 and 12%. And I think this year is going to be closer to 16% year over year. So that's great. A lot of trends kind of emerged. There's always a stories with 11-11, right? So collectibles was a thing. You know, we've got some pretty good exposure to that category too. The up ticket in terms of upgrading consumption. So it wasn't all a bunch of cheap low-end items. A lot of bigger brands with more expensive stuff that discounted even less were doing well. The strategy of limited release SKUs for a lot of brands that don't want to discount for the limited edition, some scarcity, that's done really well. And that's proven out in the data whereby, you know, the 21st or 22nd of October where the pre-sale started actually saw really, really good numbers. And that tells us that people had their eye on a lot of those purchases beforehand and really kind of waited until that discount kicked in to make that purchase. And then, you know, pet mother baby had a great year too. You know, with all the stuff we hear about falling birth rates, maybe it has to do with dragon year. We'll have to maybe see in June or next year, well, if that's a trend that's going to be going forward. Pet's been doing well for a while. Nutraceutical just exploding again, that category. Really expanded beyond, you know, your kind of 45 to 60 year olds, maybe taking a joint supplement or something. Now, young women using it for skin whitening and beauty and you know, much older people for a much wider variety of things. Even now, schools, students, you know, for concentration in fish oil and BHAs and these types of things are becoming huge as well. We said pet, right? They've always been doing well. People definitely spending more and more money on pets. It's been like a 5-year trend that we're seeing. Outdoor experiences, hobbies, rare hobbies, still a thing. But yeah, I mean, it's that same theory that we've been talking about for however long, right? Way less Louis Vuitton and way more Lululemon. But overall, I think it was a great close out to the year. I think Q4 is going to come in very strong. And I think we're very optimistic about 2025.
Okay. Is there any more sentiment or intelligence that we can start to draw about what we started to see, you know, what the brands were trying to do, some innovative approaches to November 11th, some of the things we started to see, what consumers were maybe thinking or how they're feeling? Were we able to start teasing out some things that had changed this year that were rather interesting and might be formulaic into next year's strategies?
Yeah, for sure. I think to me, I'd never seen such a big, bold move like Alibaba did this year to make it just easier to function as a brand on their platform. I felt that their rules always skewed super heavy towards consumers around return policies and free shipping and these types of things, which really put all the stress on the brands at all times. They did a couple of things over the years. Some they've gotten in trouble for, you know, like the exclusivity that they did, you know, 4 or 5 years ago where, hey, list on Tmall and we'll give you a bunch of free ads, but don't list on JD. That was always a thing that was not very helpful for anybody. And then what they did this year, a couple of months ago, I don't know if you heard this announcement, but they got real tough on return policies. So whereby, you know, there's a lot of fraud in the return market here, whereby, you know, you've got people buying on Friday, wearing for the weekend and returning on Monday. And it just with no questions asked, made that hard. But the real issue is that you could see it's a very small number of consumers doing this again and again and again and again and again. And now Alibaba's made some of that data a little bit more accessible to the merchants and not made it a complete no questions asked. You're now allowed to ask questions. And they also did what Douyin did, is now they can ban you from the store. So if somebody does this 2 or 3 times to my store and buys and returns, I can now ban them actually from buying again. And Douyin did that very successfully. We love that feature over there too. It allows, and it actually, it's good for the consumer because it allows us to lower prices even further. Dealing with this very tiny minority of returners or habitual returners, serial returners, whatever name you want to give to this group, has actually freed up operationally, made it a lot easier to operate. And it's going to lead to lower prices and better value for the people that do actually want to keep those products. At the end of the day, all penalties and you know, if it's more expensive for us to operate, that has to be passed on to the consumer, or a business just won't stay around for very long.
Really interesting that you say stuff like that. And I want to dive into an adjacent category. You talked about returns. I'm inspired now to ask you about things like chargebacks, things like in the US, credit cards own everything. If a consumer says that was fraud, the credit card gives it back to them and then takes it away from the small merchant or what have you. If you're using Square, there's nobody you can talk to. There's no phone number you can call. And it can really, I know dozens of examples of how people have worked so hard to build up stores online using Shopify and whatnot, and then they have had to shut. They got killed just from fraudulent activities and chargebacks back about 7 years ago. I was involved in a blockchain startup that was looking to see if blockchain and that immutable ledger, is there any way to possibly be able to counter the chargeback epidemic that was going on? What is the lay of the land with all of that in China and with regards to e-commerce?
So I think one of the reasons that China was able to build the largest e-commerce market in the world has a lot to do with the payments. When you go online here, we don't use credit cards at all. I think less than 1% of, actually far less than 1% of total purchases are done on credit. And they're done either primarily through Alipay or WeChat, which is just directly hooked up to your bank. All records of this are very clear. And there's no financial incentive for anybody to commit fraud. I mean, like insurance companies and banks, and we could go through what your examples, but that's a filthy industry that developed long before e-commerce and the fraud that exists. So we processed, I don't know, 100 million transactions in the last little while. Not one of them has been charged back. We've never had a fraudulent case. So I had one here. But we have little tokens with a 6-digit number that's only good one time. And even though that transmits on the internet, it's only good for 30 seconds. Well, as my credit card number can translate through the internet, it's good for 5 years. So just a completely different system. I mean, you're basically every single online transaction has a new credit card number here. Meaning even if you got in between and intercepted that credit card number, it's completely useless after that one is done in 10 milliseconds. So it's basically taken fraud out of the picture. However, like we were talking about before, you can return anything for any reason. And that has led to its own different type of fraud, but Alibaba is dealing with it. And from that's great news, especially in fashion categories.
How does China, let's stick with China, because that's where 98% of the Singles Day happens. How does it deal with the logistics? Because, I mean, anybody in North America who's tried shipping anything to family members across country at Christmas knows what a crunch and what a disaster everything becomes with the post office. How does China handle logistics around this kind of time?
Well, the one great thing is now it's not just a one-day festival, because that was a living hell. It was a living hell for everybody involved in it. You know, it was probably a 48-hour workday, really. You know, you're going to do 25, 30% of your sales in one day, so everyone's got to be on call. Like, that was fun once. Maybe twice, you know, and after that, it just became a huge burden. Numbers were great. Okay, everyone's super happy about that. But there's people on the ground that actually had to do that. And it's a nightmare. Like, I can just tell you from experience, we got good at it. But, you know, it really cuffed our hands, too, because the only way to operate in that environment was to take a specific number of SKUs. And how we did it at our warehouse is we knew what we were putting on sale. So we boxed it, you know, like a week in advance. And we put the boxed units back on the shelf. And then when 11/11 came around, it was just sticker the box, sticker the box, sticker the box, sticker the box. So we could take like 95% of the warehouse labor out of the actual 11th and do the best that we can. But it was still, yeah, everything got backlogged. Every warehouse, every, you know, just intermediary hub or spoke in that network got backlogged. Now it went over 3 weeks with a couple of peak periods in there. Really, if you were to take pictures of the Kuai Yi guys on the streets right now, you wouldn't even notice the difference.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, having come from a bit of a logistics background, I worked 4 years with UPS. I have some touch points with that whole world. And I was always so impressed with how China did all of it. But It's there's no amount of, you know, unless you can beam something over Scotty wise, like there's no getting around a crunch and a difficulty of dealing with Singles Day, no matter what. Last question. There is a lot of e-commerce platforms in China. You know, we talk a lot about Alibaba, the kind of the grandfather and Singles Day. They created it, the whole thing. Tell us a little bit about the kind of scene around all the other platforms and how they performed as well.
Well, Alibaba is coming out the clear winner. Alibaba and Jingdong are probably your two biggest 11-11 platforms. They just fit the general. You look at PDD and you look at Douyin, they're known for sort of year-round annual discounts, which makes it hard for them to just really, hey, but, you know, we told you we were the cheapest last month, but hey, November is actually going to be the cheaper this month. So they don't actually do proportionally as well as the two other platforms do. So it's still a play between JD and Alibaba's platforms primarily, but we'll see how the other ones adapt throughout the years. You know, Douyin's been incredibly innovative, but it is a little bit of a different, harder sell for an influencer to say, hey, look, I've got the lowest price on October 4th and then come back on the 10th. Whereas, you know, JD and Tmall can do that exactly. They're very clear about their S-class sales, their A-class sales, their B-class sales. And we can see that too from, you know, when we opened up on the 20th of October, we had a great day, huge day. And that, for us on a lot of the larger ticket items, people clearly had their eye on stuff that they wanted to buy for quite a while.
Okay, so now, how much rest do you get? And then when do you start preparing for the next one? And when is that one?
The schedule, I'm getting this question a lot. So at least half of today, I should be able to get a decent amount of rest. Although I've been on with media, basically up and since midnight, actually, we clocked in with Bloomberg story at 5 or 10 minutes after midnight. And then did CNBC this morning and AP and Reuters because it's a big story. So we'll get all that kind of out of the way, 4 or 5 days. And then we still 12-12 is not, you know, it was called off last year and became more of that New Year's sale. We've been to a couple of prep meetings, so that's going to be the thing, but it's not going to be huge. It's not going to be, you know, the third largest day of the year. And then we get into Chinese New Year, which is not been a major thing outside of COVID like it was during that COVID year. And then 3-8 is going to be the biggest shopping festival, Women's Day or Queen's Day in March. And then you're going to get into 6-18 planning, you know, which is going to kick off in May, probably in late May. And that's the way the schedule is going to go. And that'll take, you know, you basically all the way from Queen's Day to the summer.
Jacob Cook, co-founder, CEO of WPIC Marketing Technologies. Thank you very much, buddy. Thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
For everybody listening audio only, don't forget to head over to the WPIC YouTube channel and find our entire conversation live in living color over there. For those of you watching the video and you want to go to audio, of course, you can find us on any of your favorite podcast platforms. If you want to drop us a note or a guest recommendation, please do at podcast@wpic.co. And I would love to see as many of our viewers as possible give us a 5-star review and some nice things to say about what we do. It really helps feed those algorithm monsters so that other people can find us. For me, for Jacob, and for everybody at The Negotiation, thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Growing a company is hard. Doing it in a foreign market, exponentially so. The best piece of advice I can give you is not to do it alone. When you start looking at the Asia-Pacific region for further expansion possibilities, and I sincerely hope you do, make sure you choose the right partners to do it with. My good friends at WPIC Marketing and Technologies have almost 20 years of experience helping brands, just like yours, enter China, Japan, and Southeast Asia. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Negotiation, and if you're interested in being a guest or want to connect with me or any of our team, please reach out to us at podcast@wpic.co, and be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.